Welcome into the MTOM studio here at Iowa PBS. My name is Paul Yeager, and today you're going to have to indulge me as I'm going to talk to someone I grew up with, also went to college with, but we've taken very different paths. We actually didn't grow up that very far from one another. Jen Loeb is our guest. Jen was an athlete in high school, track and cross country, also did the two in college. And it was a reunion of some college cross-country teammates that prompted her to take this crazy adventure of mountain climbing. And Jen didn't just stop at 1, 2, 3, 4. No, she's climbed the highest peak in all 7 continents in this world. In fact, in Australia, she climbed 2 of the highest mountaintops. We'll talk about that in our second episode. We're breaking this discussion into 2 because first we're going to talk about the growing up in Iowa on the farm, what it was like down by the creek, to then being on top of a mountain. In the second, we are going to talk about climbing Mount Everest specifically and the challenges that that entails, just how every step is so hard to do. That'll be in part 2, which will come out next week. But this week, again, Jen Loeb and I will catch up on some things, find out how she got involved in mountain climbing, and what she has learned from all of this fun. Fun? It's fun for her. Jen, if you look real close in that picture, I think that might be your home place right about there. It looks great, doesn't it?
It looks great from here.
So what's it like to be the most famous person from Jessup, Iowa?
Oh, am I? I thought you were.
I still think it's you. I mean, you've been in way more newspapers, way more countries, way more continents than I ever have.
That just means I've traveled more, but you get a lot more screen time.
Yeah, it doesn't always mean that it translates to fame. Let's put it that way. I've interviewed, some of our former neighbors in other shows. So Catherine Cobb, a Jessup person from Jubilee. Yeah. Not too far down the road. Right. Ben Renshie, down the road the other way. I'm working my way down Rickard Road. I just have to, and then the intersection there.
It's interesting that we have so many, people in that little area doing big things. And, you know, it's kind of nice. It speaks well of the hometown.
Did you think growing up in small town Iowa that you would accomplish what you've accomplished?
No, never. If somebody had told me when I was younger that I was going to go climb Everest, I would have laughed. There was not even part of my wildest imagination, but it did morph into that. And, it took off and I was having fun and enjoying the ride. And so I figured I was going to ride that ride as long as I could. And it's been epic. It's been a spectacular journey. It's hard. It's almost surreal. It's really hard to even kind of wrap your head around it.
Well, and that's why I kind of wanted to wait a couple of weeks after you return to kind of what the accomplishment, if there was any chance to put things into perspective. But I always like to start at the beginning. So farm, Jessup, Iowa, tell me about growing up.
It was just the small family farm. It was the farm that Dad was raised in and then we were raised in. It's a pretty small operation and being raised in the country like that really gave me the opportunity to just be outside and really, I was always athletic, but I was always outside. And there was the Spring Creek runs through that a little piece of the farm on the side there. And so I remember I would always ride my bike down there and just run around. And, I was that kind of almost a little bit feral child running through the creek and, climbing the trees. But I spent so much time outside in nature, even in the winter. Like I was you know, building snow caves and just always outside. And I just always had this love for the great outdoors, and it was kind of my happy place.
I can picture the place driven by, you know, your home there, and you just never know when someone from small town where they're going to end up in big time. I mean, what was the point you felt like you were the farthest away from that small, from growing up? Where did you feel that you were like, this is the absolute farthest I could be from Spring Creek?
Well, I mean, geographically speaking, on the other side of the planet, you know, in Nepal, but kind of, you know, whenever I'm on these expeditions, it seems like when you're on a big climb and you're out there and it's just you and your teammates and you're in a place that's so wild and so remote, and the rest of the world just kind of, all the frivolous things kind of seem to drop away. And, you know, that's when things that you really care about seem to kind of come to the forefront, and that's what's always on your mind. And, you know, I kind of, even if I'm far away geographically, I always kind of hold those places and those people close to my heart. You know, I hold that near and dear, and, you know, it's always, you take the people, your family and your friends, you know, you hold them close to you when you're in places like that, because, you know, the things that you really care about kind of bubble to the surface, and everything frivolous just drops away. And so, like, I'm holding home close to my heart, but, you know, even if I am on the other side of the planet.
Right. And I would imagine the peace of those mountaintops, there has to be that. It's just as peaceful as it was down by the creek.
Peaceful in terms of, I don't know, because I mean, at times it can be peaceful, but then at other times it can be pretty full on, you know, if the weather is, you know, the wind is howling and the snow is blowing and you can't hear anybody over the wind and the cold is kind of biting right through your clothes. Like, it's not particularly peaceful at those moments. It can be, you know, pretty stressful and pretty full on. So you have to move and in circumstances that are dangerous, incredibly dangerous. So that's not really peaceful at those moments, but there are moments, you know, when the weather is calm and, you know, especially like after you're done climbing in the day and maybe you're in camp and, you know, the sun has set and the wind has died down and there's no atmosphere really above you. And so you can see all the stars and you kind of, you know, the beauty of those places is really hard to wrap your head around. It's so spectacular and just, you know, to be in that place and to witness Mother Nature in all her glory is quite impressive. That's when things get peaceful.
Maybe it's the creek on a winter day in January during a snowstorm. How about that?
Yeah, that's peaceful. When there's big snowflakes are kind of dropping down and it's becomes a winter wonderland.
Yeah.
There are moments where, you know, it's a winter wonderland in the mountains, but, you know, not when it's stormy.
Right. The path of, you know, high school, you mentioned athletics, cross country, track. You were always running away from, running at things and running, going. And I could never keep up with the girls' cross country team or the boys' cross country team for that matter. I could only do like 100s and 200s and then I was done. But college, what was your path when you were thinking when you went to college, what you were going to do?
So, I mean, I continued to run track and cross country all 4 years at Wartburg, and I was studying biology, and I got my degree in biology, and then after graduation, I was a high school biology teacher, and that was a very short-lived career, and so, you know, then I morphed into a different job, and I've been there for 22 years. And so, I'm not using my degree, but, I still have a good job. But being at school there and running track and cross country at the collegiate level, you know, that really set the foundation for just how hard you would have to work for something like climbing a mountain. And when it came to training for, you know, climbing these big peaks, that's the one question everybody always asks is like, how do you train? You're in Iowa. How do you train for an expedition like Everest? And, you know, I never had a coach and I never had a personal trainer. Nobody that I knew here in Iowa actually was training for climbing expeditions. So I kind of sat down and designed my own training programs based on what I knew the activity would be, what kind of climbing we would be doing. And it was it was a mix of cardio and lifting, but you know, all those miles that I ran in college kind of set the foundation.
I always like to talk to cross country coaches if I interview them and just illustrate. I go, what's the largest run that you have people do? I mean, so high school is different than college, but so what was the farthest that Coach Johnson had you run in college?
Boy, I don't even know. We always did it by time. So he would say, you know, go run for half an hour, go run for 45 minutes, or, you know, go run for an hour. And so, you know, I think there was a few times where he ran for an hour. I don't remember ever running more than that at the collegiate level, but, you know, we were moving at a pretty good clip. So running for an hour at a good clip, it was a lot.
Yeah, and I always just amazed at the dedication. I think there's a mentality of running. I mean, I joke about my ones and twos, and when I've tried to run more, I understand that there's a level that once you get past that first mile or two or whatever, you kind of kick into a gear. And I would imagine that climbing is kind of that same way, because you're like, I'm climbing a mountain, seriously, how do I get there? There's got to be some correlation, right? Of once you get over that hump, then you just have to figure out it's just one stride at a time.
Yeah, there's a lot of truth to that. And I've found even now, I'm still running, still training. And so, you know, I'll get up and hit the trail. And, you know, sometimes that first mile, it might take me a little bit to warm up, but then, you know, once the blood gets flowing and the oxygen starts moving, you know, then it's kind of like, oh yeah, you settle into a rhythm. And the same is true on a big peak. It's just a different style. You know, you're carrying a pack and it's cold and you're moving up a mountain. And you know, it might be a 5-hour day. It might be a 10-hour day, but you know, usually that first hour, you typically will move for an hour and then you take a rest, or you move for another hour, take a rest. So we're moving in chunks of time, usually an hour, could be an hour and a half before you take a break. And so, you know, sometimes that first hour is like, oh man, I feel a little rough. And then, you know, you'll hit your first break and we'll drink some water and, you know, have a little snack because you need the calories. And then, you know, you take short breaks because you don't want to get cold and stiff. And so, you know, then once you start moving after your first break, then it's like, oh yeah, you settle into a rhythm for sure.
Do you do these all by yourself? I mean, what kind of team are you with?
So typically what I will do is when I'm picking a peak that's my next objective that I want to go do, you know, I will typically just sign up and fit, you know, I'll pick the dates and sign up. And sometimes I'm climbing with friends. Sometimes I'm climbing on a guided expedition. And so, you know, they already have the dates and everything already set up. And so then I'll just sign up and then you end up on the team with whoever else signed up for that particular expedition, which is pretty interesting because that's where I met my climbing friends. It's like, we're on a team together, we're climbing a peak, and then it's like, hey, you know, let's go do this one. Let's go do this one. And so, you know, we can do this one next year, do this one in the fall. And it gives me an opportunity to meet people from all over the world, all different walks of life. I've made some really great friends, people that I still climb with to this day. And so, you know, one of my climbing buddies is in Pennsylvania. One of my climbing buddies is in Canada. You know, they're scattered all over. Mm-hmm. And so it's really been an interesting ride in many aspects. And so, yeah, it's a small climbing community. You know, it's self-selecting, but you see people from all over the world and all different kinds of jobs and languages and cultures. It opens the mind.
Sure. Yeah. Well, are you talking more to these people when you're climbing or when you're in that break after an hour or at camp before and after the hike?
Yeah.
How much talking are you doing while you're hiking?
While I'm climbing, not a lot of talking. Usually I'm breathing pretty hard. So yeah, it's there's not much talking going on as you're moving. But there is a ton of downtime on expeditions. You know, you're with your team together prior to getting to the mountain. And so, you know, you can meet and greet there and kind of, you know, establish a good rapport. And then, you know, in the evenings, you're just in a tent together. You sit around and have dinner together. You know, it's not like everybody goes home and watches TV. Like, you're all still in a camp together. You're in tents together. You're eating together. You're all, you know, you get a chance. There's no other distractions. So you really get a lot of time to talk to the people around you. Mm-hmm. And so but as you're climbing, yeah, not a lot of talking.
Well, that rules me out then. I guess I'll have to do something else. At what point did you decide this is climbing is something I want to do? I mean, was this all right, I've hit 25, I need to do this. I've hit 30, I want to do this. I mean, at what point did you decide that climbing was, I'm just going to Colorado and I'm going to, you know, hike up Pikes Peak or whatever.
Yeah, it was kind of a roundabout way of getting into climbing. I actually didn't even get into climbing till I was 35. And, you know, I had done some backpacking actually with the girls that I ran cross country with in college. They're like, hey, you know, let's go backpacking in these national parks. And I was like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's go. And it was interesting, like when you're out there backpacking, you don't actually climb any peaks, you know, the hiking trails just kind of weave through the valleys, or you might go over a pass, but you're not climbing to the top of anything. And, you know, we would be in these beautiful locations, just stunning. And I could see people climbing and I was kind of intrigued, like, wow, how do they do that? You know, what kind of fitness level do you need? What kind of gear do you need? What kind of, you know, I just didn't know anything about it. Being off the farm in Iowa, you know, we don't have a lot of climbers and I didn't know any climbers and nobody I could ask about climbing. I was very curious about it and I thought it looked like a lot of fun. And I was, I wanted to see, like, what kind of challenge is this? Is this something I can do? Is this something that, like, will my body tolerate the altitude? I don't even know. And so I was just very intrigued, very curious. And I thought it looked like fun. So I was actually doing quite a bit of volunteer work at that time. And one of the organizations that I was working with or had worked with previously was American Hiking Society. And I really enjoyed their program. You sign up and you partner with a national park or U.S. Fish and Wildlife or you know, maybe a state park, and what you'll do is you'll volunteer and you'll go out and build hiking trails, or sometimes the hiking trails are already there and you do maintenance on them. Sometimes it's removing invasive species. And so I had partnered with them and done quite a few volunteer projects with them already. And I was actually, I had some vacation time that I wanted to use, and I wanted to spend it in a national park. But I was also really trying to figure out, like, how do I even get into climbing? Like, I don't have an in. I don't know anybody. I have no idea even where to start. And so when I was looking for another volunteer project, you know, I hopped on their website and I'm scrolling through their list of options and the dates and what kind of program it is and the location, which national park you're going to be working with. And I saw one for Inyo National Forest, which is where Mount Whitney is. It's the highest peak in the lower 48 out in the Sierra Nevada. And I had been out there before doing the backpacking trips. And so I knew that area, and I had seen Mount Whitney from a distance, but I hadn't climbed it. And so I was like, oh, that looks exciting. So I clicked on the project link and I was reading the description, and it says, oh, come out to Inyo National Forest and you can volunteer for a week. We'll be doing maintenance. The trail is already there. We just need to, you know, fix it up a little bit. And then on the last day, you can go climb Mount Whitney. That's your free day. You can go climb Mount Whitney. And I thought, you know what? I'll be with a park ranger, which is great because I don't know how to climb a mountain. And you know, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what I'm doing. And if I run into trouble, like, he's going to know, you know, he's going to know what to do. He's going to have a radio. He knows the route. And so I clicked on that link and I signed up for that project and then flew out and spent a week fixing up the trails. And then on the last day, he's like, hey, who wants to go climb Mount Whitney? And I'm like, oh, I do. And so we went up and hit the summit, and we went up the Mountaineer's route. And, you know, looking at it now, it's not a particularly difficult climb at all. But at that time, you know, my first kind of dipping my toes into the water and, you know, it's like, oh, wow, you know, this was fun. This was hard. And you know, there was a couple of moments where there's just a little bit of exposure, and looking at it now, it's nothing, right? But at the time, it's like, oh, wow, this is, you know, the realization that if I fall where I'm standing right now, if I slip and fall, like, I could really get hurt. And so that's a little bit scary. And so I was like, I'm not really sure if I like this. This is, you know, it's hard and it's fun, but and it's a little bit scary. And so I wasn't really sure, like, huh, I don't know what to think about this. And then, you know, that project wrapped up and we flew back to Iowa. And then I was thinking, oh, wow, that was fun. How do I, you know, what's the next thing? How do I continue? How do I proceed from here?
Well, now, wait a minute. Were you hooked because you liked the service aspect of it, or you were hooked because I was exposed, nothing out there on that mountain and the summit is what hooked you? What got you there, and why did you say when you returned from that first trip, I want to do a second?
Because you forget about the parts that were hard or the parts that were maybe uncomfortable. It's a very short-term selective memory. And you only remember the parts where it's like, oh, you know, that thrill of standing on the top and the fun that I had with the people there and just, you know, that awe-inspiring beauty of the place and the challenge. Like, I enjoyed the challenge and pushing myself and let's just see if you can do it. And, you know, what kind of, how far can you push yourself? And so, you know, it's kind of, in a way, it's a little bit hard to describe, but just kind of what hooks you and lures you in. But it's a combination of those things, you know, just the beauty of those places and the challenge and the people that you're with and you're doing something hard together. Mm-hmm. in a way, it was almost like cross country at the collegiate level. You know, you're doing something hard together, and you keep doing it day after day. You go back to practice and do something hard, you know, with your friends again every day. And so it was almost a little bit of that same feeling. And so, you know, but I still didn't have any training. I didn't have any gear. I still didn't know anybody that could teach me. And I was trying to figure out, like, what's the next step? I don't even know. So, you know, I hopped on the internet and I kind of started digging around, trying to figure out, like, how do I go to move on? And what I found was Kilimanjaro. And I thought, oh, like, it's not a technical climb. Like, I don't need an ice axe. I don't need to know how to live on a glacier or rope travel on a glacier. I'm not going to need crampons. And, you know, I'll need warm gear for sure, but I don't need any of the technical skills, but it's a big jump in altitude. So Kilimanjaro is 19,340 feet. And I thought that's the perfect next step because I need to know if my body will tolerate that kind of altitude. And if it will, then I can move on to the next step. And if, you know, if I can't, then it's like, oh, okay, I know my limit. My body has said, this is it. You can't go any higher than this. And so I signed up for Kilimanjaro.
So now you can replicate the physical side of, I can backpack with sandbags. I can run miles, be the stair stepper, kind of that. But it's like the vomit comet at NASA. You can't replicate weightlessness before you go into space unless you're in that thing. Just like you can't replicate the high altitude in Iowa. So how do you know that, my gosh, that's a huge jump that my body has to make? I think I can do the physical side, but I don't know if I can do the altitude side. I think you were about to tell me and I just interrupted.
Okay.
Habit. Sorry.
I'm glad you're so excited about this. It's fun to talk about. Yeah, we acclimatize as we go. I can prepare myself physically for, you know, the endurance and you know, that's one of the many things that kind of allured me to climbing was it made me a better all-around athlete. Like, I have to be strong and I have to be fast and I also need endurance. It's kind of like the triple, you know, it's a trifecta of being the best athlete that you can be. And I needed all three of those things to be a good mountaineer. And so, but I can do the physical part of it here. As far as prepping myself for altitude, I can't do that in Iowa. We're, you know, we're all at 700 feet above sea level where I'm at. And so, we have to acclimatize as we go. And so that's part of the process that, you know, you just, that's why we do rotations on big peaks like Denali and Everest, obviously. And, you know, even the peak that I was just on in Antarctica, you know, you do these rotations up and down. So when you're going up, you know, you will trigger your body to adjust to that higher altitude, but you don't recover. So then you come back down. And so, you know, there's all these changes happening in your body when you're acclimatizing. Your heart and your lungs will get bigger because they're working harder. Your body will start producing more red blood cells. The pH of your blood will change. So all these things, your body is adapting to a higher altitude. But when you go up high and just stay up high, you don't recover. And the odds of getting extreme altitude sickness increase dramatically. So you have to go up high to trigger your body to adjust, and then you come back down and recover. And that might be, you know, a rotation might take a day or a rotation might take 3 or 4 days in a situation like Everest. So I acclimatize as I go. Where was I before that?
Well, we were on Kilimanjaro. We were getting ready to go up to there.
Okay,
so that's which continent is Kilimanjaro on?
Africa.
It's in Africa, so it's the highest peak in Africa.
It is.
And yes. You are tackling that one first, and you, because of the reasons you had said. When you get done with Kilimanjaro, at what point do you realize, I think I want to do... do you immediately say, I just want to keep climbing, or do you all of a sudden say, I want to do this on all seven continents?
Oh, no. The seven summits was so far from my mind. I never got into climbing with the intention of doing the seven summits. I had no intention of ever doing Everest. So when I got home from Kilimanjaro, I thought, okay, you know, I summited, my body will tolerate the altitude. I had a good time. I really enjoyed that. I need to get some training and get some gear. And so at that point, you know, I got back on the internet and I started looking, like, how do I get schooled on climbing? How do I learn how to do this? And I found that they have mountain climbing courses and you can sign up for, they have a variety of programs that you can sign up for. And I had no idea that that was a thing. I discovered that. And I clicked on a mountain climbing basics, intro to mountain climbing.
You're back in college. You're just taking
a
class.
I'm back in college. Yeah. Oh, totally. This is mountain climbing 101. Here we go. So I had a ton of gear to buy. I can't get any of that stuff here in Iowa. No, it's not like you can rent a Target and buy an ice axe.
Right. We didn't even have an REI at the point. I think that's just a late addition to the state.
Yeah, we just got an REI in Des Moines here a couple years ago, I think. And so I hopped online. You know, they gave me a list of gear. Like, here's all these things that you need to buy. And so I sat at the computer and I'm clicking on all these things and I'm buying all this gear. And I was training. I kind of sat down and, okay, you know, I had that running background, the cross country and the track, and I threw in some lifting because I knew that would be important. And so, you know, I designed a training program for myself and bought all the gear and showed up. I did my training on Rainier and went out there and it was overwhelming. It was so much. You know, the learning curve is just incredible. Like, how to set up a tent on a glacier, how to move on a glacier, all your knots and hitches and how to tie those. And, you know, I'm watching them. They're like, Jen, tie a figure eight. And I would, you know, tie my little knot and I'd hold up my, I had this ball of a knot. And I'm like, well, I got a knot. It doesn't look like that knot, but it's one heck of a knot. Not gonna hold anybody, but and they're just like, oh god.
Oh, Iowa. So, did they just say, oh, Iowa? Is that what they just called you?
No, they're just like, Iowa. You have potatoes.
What mountain is in that one? Pilot Knob? Really? Okay.
Mm-hmm. We have Mount Trashmore.
There you go, Mount Trashmore. There you go. Yeah.
Cedar Rapids finest. So there was so much to learn and it was really overwhelming, but it was super fun. And I, you know, that realization that, hey, I'm on a mountain, I'm on a glacier, I'm living on a glacier. And this is way outside of my comfort zone, but it's kind of fun and in a type two fun type of way.
Type two so, fun.
Type That's two good. Fun.
I like that.
Is it, yeah. That's a thing, type two fun, where it's fun after the fact. And so, you know, I had a great time and I was just, I had so much to learn. But anyway, I passed the course. And once I passed that course, that allowed me to start signing up for some other expeditions. Some, you know, nothing crazy. Yeah, I'm so far away from, you know, the Himalaya at that point. But I started signing up for a couple of peaks that, you know, some entry level peaks, and I went over and did these other expeditions and it was so hard and but fun. And it's like, oh, wow, I can do this. Like, I can, this is the thing I can do. And I'm getting, like, with each expedition that I was doing, I was becoming more comfortable, more confident, having more fun every time, just really enjoying that experience. And so, you know, things really took off after that, at that point. You know, I started getting into just traveling all over the place and doing all these fun expeditions and all these wild remote locations. And, you know, I had found that each expedition I was signing up for was progressively harder, progressively taller, progressively more technical. And so I was just kind of up in the ante every time I signed up for something. And then what happened was in 2013, I was signed up for Denali, which is, you know, Denali is pretty full on. Like, that is a hard mountain. And you know, the weather is typically atrocious, and you know, the altitude, you're definitely going to feel the altitude. It's you're carrying heavy packs and pulling sleds with more gear. So yeah, Denali is a super hard peak, and we were up there, we summited, we had a great time. And after that expedition was over, we were back in Talkeetna, Alaska, and we're kind of wrapping up things up, and we're saying our goodbyes and celebrating our success and having a couple of drinks. And that evening, as we're saying our goodbyes, I was talking to the guides there. They were having drinks with us, and they're like, "Oh, Jen, you should go do Everest. You're ready." And I started laughing, because I thought they were joking. They like to tease and they like to joke. And so I was laughing, and I was like, "Oh, you know, you guys are so funny, ha." And they were like, "No, Jen, like, seriously, you're ready." And I kind of blew it off because I thought, there's no way they can be serious. But, you know, we got up the next day, everybody flies home, and I came back to Iowa. And I started thinking about that, and I was like, you know, they were serious. Like, they weren't joking. And, like, they actually think that Everest is something I can do. And, like, I got a good chance up there. And they wouldn't suggest it. You know, these guys, they're professional climbers. They climb for a living, and they don't want to take people up if people aren't qualified and fit and,
well, yeah,
and ready.
I mean, there's legendary stories of people who don't make these mountains, who are petrified in the ice on the way up or something like that. I mean, right? Or is that all made up that I'm hearing?
I mean, yeah, I think everybody knows, like, there's no guarantees on any peak. And, you know, these are unforgiving environments. And so there's just no margin for error. Once you are up in, you know, that kind of space, it's pretty full on, and there's, you know, you just can't make any mistakes. And so, you know, I had flown back to Iowa after the Denali expedition, and I got to thinking about it, and I thought, you know, those guys were serious. But, and I was realizing that, hey, this is something I can really do. You know, I never got into climbing with the intention of doing Everest. I was always under the impression that Everest was for the elite climbers and the professional climbers. And I'm neither of those things. And so, but the fact that they had suggested it and said I was ready, and I thought, well, you know, this, do I really want to do this? Do I really want to do Everest? And it was actually a really difficult decision to make. That was the summer of 2013. And I spent a good chunk of the summer kind of hashing it over and turning it over again and again and again in my mind. You know, I knew that I was weighing all the pros and cons. I knew that if I'm going to do this, it's going to consume my life. Like, all I'm going to do is train and, you know, focus on good nutrition and sleep and work. and that was it. And the sacrifices that I would have to make, you know, I can't go have drinks Saturday night with my friends. I have to go to bed because I have to train hard the next day. And so it was going to be, you know, just full on, no time for goofing off. Like, this is, you know, pretty serious, and it's all about, you know, like the Olympics are, the Winter Olympics are going on right now. And if you talk to those guys and the level of training that they have to, you know, it's a lifestyle. And so, you know, it would not only consume my life, but, you know, I would need to get the time off of work. I would need to figure out how to pay for this. I would, and I could, you know, spend all this time and energy and effort putting this thing together, knowing full well that there's no guarantee you're going to summit. There's no guarantee you're going to come home in one piece. There's no guarantee you're going to come home at all. And so, you know, it's quite a gamble. You know, it's a calculated risk. And so there are all these things. So those were kind of all the cons. But then on the pro side, it was like, I'm fit. I'm qualified. They'll let me on a team if I want to do this. And I have the opportunity to do this. Like, just the fact that I have the opportunity to get on a team and go and try and climb this big peak. I mean, that alone was something.
My thanks to Jen Loeb. Again, this is part one of two. We are going to discuss next week, pick up that conversation about Mount Everest and just the challenge that that is on the human body and how she is in rare air, both physically and in the record books. That'll be next time on the MTOM Show podcast. I'm Paul Yeager. We'll see you next time. Thanks for watching.